the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, I'm joined by somebody who I think might be the forerunner in Ireland of motivational coaching. He was possibly the first person who really got this going amongst Irish sport and amongst Irish professional life. And he has a new book, I Am, I Can, I Will. Gerry Hussey, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
I think you are the pioneer in this in industry as such in Ireland, and I know others who are doing it. But tell us about this book that you have written, which deals a lot with what you call the inner voice that everybody has. Tell us a little bit about the inner voice, because I don't think that's something that people discuss a lot.
It's not, and it came from, I was getting a train with my dad from Dublin to Cork. We started chatting to a lady beside us. Turns out she'd read my first two books. She loved them, and I was sitting in there in the glow and the praise. And then the man beside her, who had no connection to her, happened to have read my books as well. And he said, oh, I've read your books also. I said, oh, what did you think of them? Waiting for the next comment to come. And he said, I didn't get anything from them. He said, I just didn't do anything for me. And I suppose my old inner voice might have retreated or got angry. But I said to him, you know, is there something about them you didn't like? He said, I think the content was too dense, too rich. I'm new to this. He said, it was just too overwhelming. He said, I didn't know where to start. So we got our bags down. As we're going through the turnstiles, if that's what you call them, in the train station in Cork, he just said to me, if you were to pick one thing, just one thing, that somebody could change that would have the most impact on their health, their wellness, their lifestyle, what would thing would that be? And I said, I don't have the answer, but can I take your number? I'll think about it and I'll ring you. So I thought about it for a good while. And I realised, yes, I know all about the brain chemistry, neurosynaptic connections. I know about the gut-brain axis. I know about the nervous system. That's all very important. But it was a great question. What one thing? And the one thing I realised was, we spend every minute of our lives with ourselves. Nobody has a greater impact on who you are, what you do, how you live, and how you experience in life than you have with yourself. So it was a great question. It made me really distill. And I do believe that your inner voice, when you become aware of it, you soon realize the massive impact it's having on every moment of every day.
What do you mean when you become aware of it? Aren't we all aware of, as we're thinking, that thought process? It's almost like we're speaking to ourselves. Or is that the way it is for everybody?
I think we can be aware of it, Matt. I think we hear it so often that at times certain things or certain stories that it says can become unchecked. I think we get to a point where we nearly engage with every thought we have and we nearly believe it. So we can often tell ourselves stories that actually have no basis in reality whatsoever. So we have to get into the habit of listening to it, fact-checking it, but also beginning to ask, where did this voice come from? When did I first hear it? Why am I still telling myself? And ultimately, is this voice inside of me enabling me or disabling me? Is it empowering me or disempowering me?
And what answer do you come to on that?
I think for most people, and I've worked with everyone from, you know, parents to athletes to world champions, I think most people find it hard to believe in themselves. I think we all have a voice inside that at times says, I'm not enough, I'm not good enough. Or a voice inside that can be far too harsh on ourselves, far too hard. A voice that can, very often we speak to ourselves in a way that we wouldn't speak to a loved one or we wouldn't speak to a child. So what I call that is our inner critic. We have a very loud inner critic and we have a very low inner coach. So we tend to encourage other people. We cheerlead other people. We motivate other people, but we can be very hard on ourselves. So when we actually start to listen to the habits and patterns of our inner voice, a lot of us can realize the only person actually holding me back is myself.
Because that's the one thing that came out to me most out of I Am, I Can, I Will, is dealing with the fear of failure, overcoming the fear of failure.
There's a story I tell about a golfer. I can't name them, but I think anybody might know. But in one of the sessions he says, we talk about a particular moment where his performance capitulated. And I tried to replay again and again, what was actually going on there? And he said to me, I got to the point I couldn't even see the hole. Now, this is an incredible player on a green. I couldn't even see the hole. And I said, I was just filled with terror. I just couldn't think. So when we become full of fear, the prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is the, you know, clarity, the focus, shuts down. The limbic and the amygdala activate, which means now we're running on panic. There's cortisol, adrenaline. So we lose our ability to see, to think, to act clearly. And when I asked him what was really driving the fear, he said, I was so afraid of missing. When we explored that more, I asked him, were you really afraid of missing, or were you afraid of the voice you'd hear if you missed? Were you afraid of the feelings you would feel if you missed? And I think a lot of us think we're afraid of failure, but I think we're afraid of what happens when we fail, or what happens inside of us if we fall short, that voice that comes on and berates us.
Although, isn't it the question, a lot of the time the fear of failure means it becomes inevitable that we do fail and then end up berating ourselves.
That's it. And in the book, I wanted to show that the subconscious, the inner voice, is actually the spokesperson of the subconscious beliefs. If there's one thing you got to change, it's your subconscious beliefs. So if you have a boxer who's telling himself every day that he can be world champion, but he doesn't actually believe it, it's never going to change. It's in that crisis pressure moment when the world is watching, where everything is on the line, you haven't time to think. So it is the content of your subconscious programs that comes to the fore. It's those deepest beliefs. So that's why in the book I show people how to move through the subconscious, through the inner voice, and then that helps them realize what their deepest subconscious programs are.
But just taking the sporting example, say golf, for example, isn't it a question, though, that really, rather than listening to your voices, it's actually trusting your practice and your process, that if you have practiced your putting often enough, that you will putt it because it's second nature. It's when you actually start listening to your inner voice or the noise around you that you allow yourself to be distracted from the process that you follow to hole every putt.
Absolutely. And we talk about in the book the two voices, the chatterbox of the ego, which is fear-driven, should, could, might, what if I miss, what if I fail, and the deeper wisdom. So what I train athletes is to become mindless. So they're standing over the ball, there's no thought, it's just silence.
You're in the flow, isn't it?
It's pure flow state. You're trusting instinct. You trust the grip. You trust your body. You just trust. It's instinctual, but it's back to what you said, Matt. It's repetition, years of repetition, 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 repetition. And then you just do it. You follow the process. And whether you're an athlete, or I work with airline pilots, I work with lots of different people in crisis situation, what we have to do is train them to take the emotion out of it and follow instinct, follow the process.
But yet also in the book, you do encourage people to follow their dreams. And I'm going to take a little bit of issue with you on this one.
Of course.
Right? In a sense of, is that necessarily always realistic for some people? Because I was reading another book recently which argued very strongly about not following your dreams, but following your talents. That you can dream of being maybe a pop star or a golf star or whatever, but you might not actually have the talent for it. That where you should actually have your dreams and your ambitions should be based in a degree of reality as to where your talents lie, and then develop those talents.
I don't agree, because I know people that are very good at numbers and they become accountants and they hate it. Your talent and your passion are different. So when I was 15 or 16, you know, people who know my work, at one particular time, I was in there, I was failing my junior cert. I had a terrible speech impediment. My biggest fear in any given day was being asked to speak in public. I was after my second suicide attempt. Where was my talent then? If somebody said that kid is going to travel the world doing talks and writing books, nobody would have believed it. Talent can be developed. I think it has to be passion. We can be good at something. Like I said, there's often people who follow jobs because they're good at that, but they're not passionate about it. So for me, what makes your soul come alive? When I talk about dreams, it's not about following dreams of what other people, it's asking yourself, in this one short, beautiful life, if I wasn't afraid to fail, if I dared to go after what makes me happy, what fills me with passion, what would that be? And I think that's what a dream is. A dream is passion. It's not this logical thing in our head where we work out a step. And in the book, I say, the right person with the right process never worries about the outcome. So the purpose of a goal is not achieving the goal. The purpose of a goal is the person having that goal makes you become. So if you're pursuing something And like me, I had to learn to speak in public. I had to rebuild my subconscious programs. I had to go into therapy. I had to let go of fear. That alone became the outcome. So I think when you dare, whether it's climbing a mountain or doing something, and it makes you become filled with courage and strength, that's actually the goal in itself. So pursuing your dream, you can pursue being an Olympic champion.
And yet only three people become medalists in any event every 4 years. Many people miss out, not because they don't have a dream, but because somebody else is better than them. I don't want to sound like I'm a glass half empty
and
person in this.
I've worked with loads of people. So let's say I've worked with loads of athletes who've gone to the Olympic Games and didn't win a gold medal. If you ask any of those athletes, if they were back again, would they have chosen to play small, get a job they didn't like, or would they dare to go after it? They will always say, I had to go after it. I had to chase that dream. I had to scratch that itch. There's a beautiful expression, and I have this in the book, that says the greatest tragedy of life is not death. The greatest tragedy of life is arriving at the end and realizing we never lived. Another nice way of saying that is the greatest tragedy of life is all the little dreams we allow die within us as we live. I've worked with GA teams. I've worked with county players who never lifted the Sam Maguire or the Liam McCarthy. But my God, they have some experience. And yes, there's devastation when they don't achieve. But if you ask them, if you were back again, would you go for it? They would say yes, because what I got from it, the connection, the joy, the fun, the memories, it filled me with, you know, if you, all of these athletes at some point sat in, you know, Semple Stadium or they sat in Croke Park and they looked out and a little voice appeared in their heart. And that voice says, I want that. I want to experience that. So you look at these Mayo players, incredible guys who didn't lift the Sam Maguire. But I still think that the memories, wearing that jersey, the connection, the passion, the way they lifted spirits of their fans.
Even just being there.
I think that enough sometimes has to be enough, Matt, because not everyone's going to win the medal. It's the medal.
No, and that's the point I'm coming to, because I just wonder that for some people, that if you encourage them to dream, what if that dream becomes a nightmare for them? That they actually don't achieve what they wanted to achieve. That they are unable to deal with the problems that might develop along the way, where others succeed, where they don't. That it's not necessarily, you know, sometimes can you be setting somebody up with an unrealistic dream, or can you set yourself up with an unrealistic dream, which is going to make you unhappy when you realise that you actually can't achieve it?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One is you always build a human being. So a human being, in order to live life, has to be resilient. We have to be courageous. We have to, you know, we have to have a strong sense of who we are. And we can't be defined by what we do. So if a player is defined by what he does or what she does, and then she needs the medal to be enough, then you've set that athlete up for a fall. In every athlete I've worked, you build the human being first. You build that sense of awareness and perspective. You build that sense of joy, that sense of passion. And they only pursue it as long as it's making them happy. I've worked with athletes who had every ability to go and win an Olympic medal, but their heart wasn't in it. And I was the first person to say, forget about it, move on to something else. So it goes back to what we started about. It is about living a life that is full of passion and joy and freedom.
But it also is important to know how to move to something else, isn't it?
Oh, of course, of course. And when to move.
The reason I say this, and I don't want to be sounding negative by asking, but, you know, sometimes people have to realise this isn't working out for me. This is not a dream I'm going to be able to fulfil, but I can fulfil myself by doing other things. Now, I would argue it is about maybe following your talents or developing your talents, but there is a danger, I would have thought, in just getting yourself obsessed with one thing and not been able to do it and not been able to move on from it.
Yeah, but obsession is never a word I would use. I create balanced people. So it's like, you know, you look at a lot of great athletes out there and they've won every medal there is to win and they still want to do it because it's not about the medals. Or you look at some of the greatest athletes who have more money than they'll ever spend, but they still want to do it. Like the likes of Lewis Hamilton. What drives Lewis every day to wake up and be better? Because he's driven. He loves it. You look at Max Verstappen. they love what they do. They love the challenge, and there'll be a day in which they don't get that again.
Well, indeed, which is why so many athletes, when they retire, struggle with not having that adrenaline of actually the competing and the exhilaration of winning. Although also you would get perhaps some sports stars who are more driven by when they fail and need to come back. But just to finish, this isn't just about athletes or performers in sport. We actually use those as examples, but what you're looking about are people in life in general, isn't it?
It's people. It's looking at, and you know, it's looking at most people who wake up in the morning and we have a story. We are focused on something. And what I'm asking is, when you think of the things you're thinking about, what you're listening to, the news you're listening to, is it empowering you or disempowering you? Most people are focused on what they can't control. Most people are focused on where their weakness is. Most people are focused on what they don't have. And that sends us with a sense of lack, limitation, frustration and failure. So what if we woke up in the morning? What if we focused only on what we can control? What if we focused on what we had? What if we practiced gratitude? What if we focused not on where our pain is, but where our power is? And I think that's what this is. So even if you're, you know, a young mum or a young dad and you're after having a young baby and you're trying to work, your life gets turned upside down. Your whole life identity is challenged. And, you know, most mums, most dads begin to think they're failing because they can't do it all. And I think we all would benefit from this idea. Like, athletes are so lucky that they have psychologists and coaches working all the time. But I think whether you're trying to compete in the corporate world or whether you're trying to raise children or just busy, manage your busy life, I think at times we all need a little help. I think we all, as I said at the start, we all push ourselves too hard. We all doubt ourselves too much. And we put our focus, energy and awareness into things that deplete us, into things that distress us. So what we got to do then is retrain ourselves. And this book isn't for a second, you know, pretending that if you just change your story and meditate, the problems of the world go away. So people with sick children, people who've been told they have 6 months to live, that's not going away. But what I'm saying is, how are you choosing to turn up into that challenge? So we can't always make challenges go away. We can't make pain go away, but suffering and pain are very different. Suffering is my response. It's how I think about the world. It's how I perceive myself. And if you look at a big mountain and your story is that mountain's too big, I'm not strong enough, I can't do that, then the mountain seems incredibly difficult. But if you can turn up at the same mountain and say, I trust myself, I'm allowing myself to try climb this, I'm going to break it down into small moments, I'm going to enjoy every piece of it, and I'm going to fill this journey with joy and love, the chances of making the top suddenly increase dramatically. And we know that from a science point of view, we know how much our inner stories shape our reticular activating system, how much they calm the nervous system. And if you can turn up into chaos in a state of calm, if you can turn up into crisis in a state of calm, that changes everything. So this book isn't pretending that the world isn't full of challenges. It is. But what this book is trying to say, if you can control your inner narrative, if you can balance your nervous system, if you can listen to that story, if you can awaken your inner coach and you approach that challenge with greater confidence, greater ease, greater awareness, knowing that you're not defined by the outcome, but you're defined by how you turn up.
Gerry Hussey, I am, I can, I will is the name of the book. It's been great having you in The Last Word. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.